It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about tainted traits and prosecutorial plots. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Mike Mann and Sarah Jane Huntington are voice talent Steve Gray, Danielle Hewitt, Jonathan West, and Melissa Medina. Now, get your ticket ready. Take your seat in our Theater of the Minds and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Mike Mann and is performed by Steve Gray. Sins of the Father or History Repeating Itself? What causes the evil we do? Witness the lineage of those who are compelled to indulge in the wicked obsessions from the primal acts that have been set since the creation of the soul. Now, without further ado, I present to you Inheritance of the Devil.
John S. Cantrell was born to a young couple residing in the small town of Cesar, Illinois. Father Richard was a plumber by trade for 10 years before the birth of young John. His mother, Miranda, was the typical stay-at-home spouse, as was expected during those early times of the 20th century. They were part of the middle working class where money was enough to live slightly comfortably, but nowhere near the life of luxury. And times were usually difficult towards the end of the month. The couple were high school sweethearts and married right out of school. Richard graduated and Miranda dropped out after a junior year to pursue a life as a housewife. After finishing high school, Richard landed a job in his father's plumbing company. The company was all Richard's father had left to hold on to after his wife's passing from a severe pneumonia case. Richard was only 9 when he lost his mother. So from then on, only his father raised him, and the term tough love was the main premise of that father and son relationship. So needless to say, when it became Richard's turn to be a father, that same form of love was bestowed upon young John. However, with the strong-willed mother, Miranda, still around, that tough love was occasionally dampened by her soft embrace. John was born on July 22, 1923, and by that time, Richard had to unofficially take over the family plumbing business after his father had fallen ill due to his liver failing. Losing a wife, raising a son alone, and running a business can be a bit stressful, and his form of release came from a bottle of Jack and the periodic backhand to Richard's face whenever a plumbing job didn't go as planned. The occasional drink here and there can be fine, but in the case of the widowed man, 2 or 3 bottles became necessary every day. By the 6th year of Richard working for his father, he was basically running the company while his father remained in an alcohol-induced coma. This left poor Richard numb to his father's cries, and the stress of doing so many things at once sometimes felt like the entire world was about to blow up in his face. It became harder and harder to come home and pretend everything was perfectly fine. The stress barely subsided after his father had stepped down and young John had been born. By this time, Richard did have a few people working for him, which lightened the load just a slight bit. But running a business is never simple, and as they say, shit eventually boils up, which is what Richard was experiencing every day. And a few years later, his father finally passed, leaving Richard the sole owner of Cantrell Plumbing Company. Around the time that little John was walking and talking, Richard was bringing his frustrations home with him, which never brought any good fortune. Screaming matches broke out almost every night, ending with a red-faced and sobbing Miranda lying defeated on the bed, or a massive hole in any wall closest to Richard Richardson's knuckled fist. Luckily for John, he was too young to understand what was happening and too small to feel his father's wrath, at least for the time being. Some nights didn't end with mommy crying or daddy throwing his hand through a wall, and those times took on a good, happy tone filled with laughter and games. The smell of cookies from the kitchen, the monotone sounds from the living room radio, Richard lounging in his recliner. If John could travel through time to one of his favorite memories, this would be one of his first ones to visit. Consider these times the diamond in the rough for young John Cantrell. At the beginning of the Second World War, John was halfway through his final year of high school and becoming at least what his father expected to be a man. Football and gym routines were good sources to relieve John's aggression and frustration from the dismal times at home. Richard was still running the plumbing company and now had developed the same habit as his father, with a few bottles of liquor stashed in his office. Not to mention the spare bottle housed in the truck glove box and the few stashed around the house. Drunk daily and fueled with anger always caused darkness to fill the home. By this point, Miranda had become a shell of her former self from all of the beatings Richard gave her. She had given up the fight along with just giving up any will to do anything at all. John tried his best to cheer her up, but she was too far gone. Although a smile would occasionally appear, the eyes always remained dead within. The nights Richard burst in with a drunken rage to lash at the scapegoat who used to be his wife, John made the best effort to prevent the chaos only to become the victim of savage beatings, leaving blood oozing from his nose, blackened eyes, and once even a broken collarbone. Things never got better in his life, for it just remained the same thing over and over again. It is a mind-numbing atmosphere filled with suffering and so much hate that you could very well strangle someone with it. The worst came on the day of John's 18th birthday. By this time, he had finished school, but did not follow in his father's footsteps to join the family business. He had become hell-bent on leaving everything behind to join the fight against those Nazi cocksuckers, as Richard liked to call them. Richard has torn on his feelings about his son's choices because, on the one hand, his son would be, in his eyes, the ultimate man by going overseas to fight for his country. However, there was some hurt feelings and disappointment that the family business wouldn't remain in the family. Sadly, Richard's constant intoxication had left him blind or maybe even naive to the fact that both his wife and son hated him with a passion, or that his son was not leaving to serve his country but to get as far away from him as possible. And let's not forget to point out that Richard's obliviousness that his wife was completely and mentally removed from everything. He lived in his own world thanks to the bottle attached to his lips and the rose-colored glasses permanently attached to his face. Miranda refrained from participating in many things, but one thing that she never missed out on was the celebration of her baby boy's birthday. Every year was the same occurrence. Yet it made John feel his happiest because that was one of very few times he witnessed his mother return to her former self. So he always cherished it with all of his heart. Always the same triple-layered buttercream cake with the same number of candles, except she would write his age in blue frosting. Richard would always sit in his chair with a drink in his hand while Miranda would sing "Happy Birthday" in weak-toned yet perfect harmony. Never any gifts to be given after John had turned 16 because real men don't need anything they can't earn. Which didn't bother John because seeing the light return to his mother was the gift he looked forward to. This birthday felt different than all of the others. There was nothing in particular that John could point out, yet something in the air gave him a slight chill down his spine. Something weighed heavy on his heart. It could have been the news of leaving for boot camp, but even that didn't feel like enough to cause what he was feeling. The day had gone fairly well, with a few friends trotting down the town streets to check out the different shops so John's buddies could get him a gift and pretend they'd had their eye on it for a while to give him. They saw a few girls down by the strip mall and told them about plans for the future after his return from the war. After a while, it was time for John to depart so he could go home and receive the gift of his beautiful mother bestowing upon him a smile and her lively self, which was a rare occasion. That was all that was truly on his mind, to spend his final birthday moments with the one person who had been the shield to his father's abuse. The closer to home he got, the more excited he became. But there was also that heavy sensation returning to his chest, with much more intensity this time. Walking to the steps of the house, he saw that the only light was in the farthest from on the left side, which he assumed had to be the bathroom. Aside from that, the only illumination was the porch light, so in his mind, this meant his mother had changed routine and planned a surprise for his 18th birthday. John turned the door handle to a living room drenched in complete darkness with only a sliver of light emitting from the cracked doorway of the hallway bathroom door. It was completely silent, which was almost deafening to his ears, and the only sound heard was the beating of his increasingly thumping heart. He called out for his mother, but there was no reply except for the echo of his own voice. A few steps toward the bathroom door were met with a soggy slurp of his foot on the wet carpet. He paused briefly to look down to see what had caused that sound, and below his foot was the darkening red stain seeping and spreading in the hall. Visibility proved more difficult with only the small light beam from the cracked door leading to the bathroom. Slowly creeping to that spot with a hand ever so gently pushing the door open caused an obnoxious squeak, then accompanied by a guttural wail from John's very soul. One arm left dangling off the edge of the tub, resembling that of a doll, displayed in a watery red pool filled with her own blood that escaped from slashes across various parts of her face and body. The poor woman was savagely stabbed and cut from something that left long, rough-edged wounds. A massive gash on the side of her neck was still releasing drops of blood that fell into the tub. And John heaved when he noticed that her left eye socket was in full grisly display, with the eye hanging from a single strand of muscle tissue. The bottom of the eye resting on his mother's cheek. Clearly, this attack had been fierce and fueled by rage, judging by the blood that splattered the walls to the mirror and even parts hitting the ceiling with such veracity. This was an act of pure primal rage with the intent to completely destroy, leaving a damn near impossible ability to even recognize the person lying before poor John. His eyes burned from the bright light beaming before him, and his throat was sore from the continuous screaming that spewed out of his mouth, forming massive tears and snot running from his nostrils. The cries echoed so loudly through the house that his ears began to ring in pain. Dropping to his knees, he wasn't sure what to even do at this moment. The kindest woman he had ever known was gone and destroyed in the most savage way he could have possibly imagined. His mind racing, with legs shaking, and the thoughts kept bouncing within his head until it all fell silent with the muffled sound of someone's laughter. It was a slow, slurred chuckle from behind him, but John wasn't entirely sure where or from whom it was coming. The sound snapped him back to reality, leaving him somewhat calm enough to get to his feet and try to discover what sick bastard thought his mother's murder was so goddamn funny. The sound continued, pausing briefly for the person to catch their breath to start back up again, carrying the same tone each time. John followed the sound as it grew more distinct, leading him to the garage, which was located at the opposite end of the hallway from the front of the house. John didn't grab anything to defend himself or even prepare for an attack, because at this point, the world had ended, and he was ready to leave it if need be. He opened the door to the garage, where the laughter resonated loudly from the throat of his drunken and bloodied father, lit up by a rusty lamp set on a small makeshift end table. The son of a bitch was sitting in a wicker chair laughing. A full bottle of liquor in one hand and a broken one in the other was dripping blood from a jagged end. John flipped the main light switch to show a blood-drenched Richard slouched in a chair, giggling with a cigarette set between his lips. Richard's eyes were barely opened and completely bloodshot from obvious gulps of the shattered bottle in one of his reddened hands. John spewed the words from the bottom of his gut to catch the monster's attention. "What the fuck did you do? What the fuck did you do to her?" His throat ached after he finished that final word, and he rubbed it in order to soothe the pain. Richard was beyond drunk at this point, so it took several moments before the words even registered in his head or even realized who had spoken them. Finally, he looked up at his shaking and distraught son, then paused before smirking to spit up, "Oh, hey, birthday boy." A huge glob of saliva slowly oozing from his bottom lip. "I'm so glad you can market yourself here, boy." Every word was like a nail being driven into John's skull. He was dumbfounded about what he should even do with his father so far gone. He wanted to strangle the heartless bastard, and he would have if his feet had allowed him to move from that spot. He remained frozen and couldn't speak a word, for he had become completely paralyzed. Richard shifted in his chair, then opened one eye wide to really focus on his son. Then let out another chuckle before slurring again. "It was just third time to go by. Too much, babe, you should turn you into a pussy." A sinister grin stretched along each corner of that bloodied face that once was human, but now all that remained was the monster that took Miranda's life. Richard let out a huge sigh, and as he did, a belch came forth, bringing the horrific sound of gagging that emitted vomit that landed on his chest. "Oh, fuck," Richard cursed. "Maybe four brothels was too much. Anyway, boy, listen, I had to take her for you to mack you man. Now she's gun your man. I'll be seeing you's the boy." Before John could move or utter a word, Richard took a huge gulp from one bottle and then dropped it before raising the broken bottle to his throat. With a fierce stabbing motion, he pierced the flesh of his neck and continued tearing open the wound, revealing muscle and tendons that were being drowned in mass amounts of blood. He coughed and gurgled, spilled blood in a projectile motion that landed on John's shoes. Speechless as well as motionless, John watched the bottle drop from his father's dead hands and the blood drain from the enormous gash until it finally became a slow drip. It would be hours before John could leave his frozen state to call the cops and report his parents' murder-suicide. There was never a true explanation for why his father killed his mother other than the garbled, drunken nonsense vomited from his mouth. The question would never be answered, nor would the question as to why the Cantrell Plumbing Company building had been vandalized and odd, unintelligible phrases scrawled in what was later confirmed to be blood all over the office walls. Or why, in the basement of the building, the bodies of the two employees who worked there had been found in various forms of slaughter. One was found tied upside down, dangling from a support beam with his head removed and over 67 stab wounds throughout his torso. His head was found in a jar full of pickle juice in the passenger seat of Richard's truck. The second victim had been nailed to the foundation wall. His limbs had holes hollowed through with a hammer drill. Then 9-inch cement screws were used to suspend his body up and display like Jesus. There were no stab wounds, however, his eyes had been removed and his genitals had been ripped off and placed in his mouth before his face had been bludgeoned by a hammer that was found next to his body. The eyes of the second victim were never found. Richard was a mean drunk, and yes, he beat his wife and kid, but the acts he had done on the day of John's 18th birthday seemed hard to believe. John left the next day to join in the fight against Germany, never looking back when he got on that bus. He had no other family that he was aware of, so all he had now was himself. And being that he was a man now, it was time to move on and escape the hell he had just witnessed to move to the next hell that awaited him.
I hope you enjoyed Inheritance of the Devil, as written by Mike Mann and performed by Steve Gray. Our second tale of the evening is written by Sarah Jane Huntington and performed by Danielle Hewitt, Jonathan West, and Melissa Medina. This story is about two of the most powerful feelings imaginable, love and pain. And when the two are combined, well, stay tuned to find out. Now, without further ado, I present to you Murder Most Horrid.
I'd like to tell you a story, and I need you to understand that it won't be a romantic, pleasant account. After all, this story is a twisted tale of love and pain. Those two infinite and exquisite emotions that go hand in hand, as if they belong together when they shouldn't. Love is red, or so they say. Pain is more of an endless consuming darkness. At least, it is to my mind. Everything in my head is black now. So black that it's as if I went in with a brush and painted it to look that way. Love hurts. They say that too. Although hurt gives the impression of a wound that can heal, a sensation that will most certainly fade in time and leave nothing behind but a flimsy scar. One you might glance at from time to time until you forget how you even came to have it in the first place. True pain, the deepest of all, doesn't scar. It leaves behind a gaping wound, one that oozes misery until the infection deep within spreads and kills you dead. True pain doesn't submit. It festers and it rots. It turns a shiny, bright soul into a woman like me, one draped in a mold and with a single-minded focus and determination. One so enraged by bitterness and betrayal that a sharp knife in a hand becomes the one talisman to end all suffering. They also say that the ending of all stories must have redemption, or a happy ending at the very least. Perhaps one of clear skies and autumn sunsets, lovers strolling hand in hand, a united pair lost in their own secret world created between them. Mine ends in fire and blood. Lots and lots of blood. I'm a kind and quiet girl. Everyone says so, so it must be true. I cross my legs and wrap my arms firmly around myself, tightly, as if I need my limbs to bind and hold my shaking body together. Goosebumps break out over my skin, yet sweat breaks out across my back. I can't seem to stop my leg from twitching wildly. I risk a glance and meet the detective's calm, intelligent eyes. It's important that I get this right. It's essential, after all. I know that. I swallow my pain. It's a bitter, vile pill to have to stomach.
So it's your belief he killed those girls?
He has a deep, velvety voice with a richness hidden within the tones that I find I quite like. I see his wedding ring, still sparkly and new on his finger. I wonder what his wife, or maybe his husband, thinks of his long, unsociable hours. Does he love that person as much as he did when he married them? Or is one of those people already regretting the vows and promises they made together? I take a deep, shuddering breath and answer. Yes, Detective, I suppose it must be true. After all, Whoever knows a person, really. I had no idea he killed those girls at the time. I mean, how could I? They were so nice and full of fun. I was happy to make friends with them both. It was lonely out there. I thought they'd just left and not told me. I mean, us. As for your earlier question, he ran, I think. They ran off together to hide. Him and her. It hurts so much. To be deceived like that, and then to find out that I married a killer? It's unbelievable, really, it is. He was an angry man, you know, deep down. My parents died one after the other. I was so vulnerable when I met him. And maybe a little weak, too. That's how he tricked me so badly. That's how he found his way in. I'm so angry at myself, Detective. I should have seen. I should have noticed. If I had, innocent people wouldn't have died. He stole my money, too. Well, they did. They took it all. The detective smiles at me, a smile laced with pity and sadness. I feel my stomach untwist only slightly, but it loosens all the same.
People like him, they're very clever. It's not your fault in any way at all. We'll find him. Mexico, did you say?
Yes, he always wanted to see Mexico. I imagine that's where they went. Together. He nods and shuffles his paperwork. I sense our meeting has come to an end. The detective has lots to do. Because of me. I did well, I tell myself. I did really well. I stand and shake the detective's damp hand. All I want to do is go home. Go home to lick my wounds and curl myself into a ball. Maybe have a sandwich or something good to eat for comfort. The worst part is over now, and he believes you. The tall, handsome detective believes every word you just said. Everything is going to be okay. I smile as I leave. A small, hidden smile that, of course, no one can see. What a shame. It was all nothing but lies. Now for the truth. A secret to hold, just for you. I suppose it all started the first moment I saw him. After all, who was I before him? I can't recall much of myself from before. I worked for my father in the butcher store he owned. I spent my days and evenings chopping and bagging meats and washing the blood from the floors. I was never squeamish. I grew used to the gore. So much so that I had, in fact, planned to be a mortuary assistant someday. Death in its many forms always fascinated me. As it happened, my mother died. She keeled over quite dramatically while she caught the latest episode of the show she loved, knitting pins firmly gripped in her hand. Before my mother turned cold in her eternal box, I took her place at the front of the store. Now, one thing people never seem to realize about me is this. I lacked emotional depth entirely. I acted as if I possessed such a skill. Of course I did. But it had eluded me from day one. I imagined feelings to be great wild bursts of colors, while I was a plain and standard gray. Real, genuine feelings became something out of my reach entirely. I watched people from a young age, and so I learned how to play at one correctly. I managed to become the perfect mimic, and I was good at it too. From time to time, I received an odd look from one of our customers, and I would understand from their frowns or expressions that I'd messed up. The older I got, the rarer those looks became. My people mask stayed firmly glued in its place. I became known as a kind and quiet girl. A nice girl. I was, I guess am, a psychopath by definition. I just didn't know early on, and for me, it was never really that straightforward to begin with. My father began to irritate me soon after my mother died. So I poisoned him. I made the decision, and I stuck to it. Nobody suspected the grieving daughter, me, with my kind, pretty face and sweetness. I had no regrets. It was simply his time to go. I always loved control. Town rumor had it that my father died of a broken heart on account of my mother's death, and the butcher store became mine. 3 days after my father's funeral, after my fake tears, the gentle dab at my dry eyes in public, he walked in. Him. My life. The man that would turn my dull, empty world into a whole new universe. One full of splashes of vibrancy and colors unknown.
I'm looking for cuts of steak, please.
Unromantic, I know. I simply stared. His face looked chiseled, in that perfect definition of classical beauty that some people are lucky enough to be gifted. His blue eyes sparkled, and he had the tiny beginnings of wrinkles in the corners. He was tall, taller than me, and walked with a grace I wouldn't dare to even try to copy. My words escaped me entirely.
A steak, please? Well, two, actually.
What for? I was aware that I was blinking rapidly while my brain ran haywire by itself. I could picture us both living in a farmhouse somewhere rural, maybe, with a litter of blonde-haired children scampering around while I placed washing out on the line, one he'd hung with his strong, muscular arms.
For me?
He smiled and revealed perfect white teeth. A look of confusion swept across his features as he took an unconscious step back. I'm sorry. I simply meant to ask what the occasion might be. We have various types of steak, different quality and different prices, you see.
I have a date.
Tornadoes themselves whirled around inside of me. Thunder and lightning shattered me into two. I reminded myself to breathe and conjured up my most effective charm act. Then she's a lucky girl. I'll fetch our best then, shall I? He grinned and nodded. I went out back and picked up two of the worst steaks I could find. Ones that had been destined for the bin. Before I wrapped them, I threw them both on the floor first. I was overwhelmed with rage and jealousy right then, and I didn't even know his name. I pulled my apron lower and opened a few of my shirt buttons. Here you are. I hope your date goes well. He met my eyes and paused. I had a feeling he was on the cusp of saying something important to me, but thought better of it. Are you okay? I tried to prompt him. He took an awkward, almost clumsy step forward, and his beautiful mouth spoke.
I just realized, you're the girl whose parents both died recently, aren't you? News travels fast in this town.
I am. Yes, and it's been hard. I'm on my own, you see. It's just me. I fluttered my eyelashes, a look I copied from the movies. I get so lonely. So lonely.
Sorry for you. That's really tough. Say, maybe we can get coffee sometime. If you'd like that.
Oh, yes. I very much did like that. That was the beginning. My true beginning in my gray life. My own personal rebirth. I was obsessed. His hair smelled permanently of baby powder and the lemon shower gel he always preferred to use. His hands were both soft and firm at the same time, and that smile he saved for when he felt truly happy thrilled me. He made me feel emotions that were brand new. A whole explosion of clarity and colorful feelings. One coffee turned into two, and on and on. 6 months later, he moved into my apartment above the butcher shop. 2 months after that, he asked me to marry him. He actually bent down on one knee and asked me. Of course I said yes. I was deliriously happy. I'd won after all. My act cracked slightly over the course of our time together. but the cracks themselves were hairline fractures and hardly noticeable from the outside. Truly, I deserved an Oscar for my performance. It was on our honeymoon, hiking in a national park, when our relationship took the nastiest of blows. That's where I first killed someone. At least, the first one he knew of. I probably need to backtrack. I get ahead of myself sometimes. I often think that my mind might keep its memories safe and locked away on records. Old black spinning records, the type that were popular years ago. I have to go off and retrieve them from the dusty boxes in the corner of my mind and dust them down, or they won't play again. Sometimes my memories are too scratched, and when I try to play them, parts skip by mistake or refuse to play at all. So to the best of my knowledge, the sequence of events was as follows. In a blissful happiness, we were 8 days into a 10-day hiking adventure. Nothing but lush trees and dogged trails, walking and romantic nights under the stars. He had chosen the national park as our destination. Him. We made love every night, and it was me that became the insatiable one. I felt forever hungry for him. In the daytime, while he hiked ahead of me, I stopped to watch him move until he had to shout out my name and tell me to catch up. On the 8th day, lost in our own private world and after seeing nobody around for days, we bumped into two girls who were hiking together. By girls, I mean younger than me, and with breasts much perkier than mine. Obviously, I hated them. I saw him stare at their chests first, while I held their eyes. I suppose that's quite normal for a man. It's what they do when they get confronted by young beauty, after all. But I didn't like it. Not one bit. My veins filled up with the curious feeling of ice. That awful coldness that seeps in so hard, you feel as if liquid nitrogen was running amok inside the marrow of your bones. I elbowed him roughly as the girls smiled their wide, perfect-toothed grins. "How's your hike, ladies?" My heartbeat thundered in my ears.
"Great! We're camping by the river tonight."
"So are we."
"No, darling. We're carrying on, remember? A few more miles yet." I snarled and tried to keep the fake grin plastered on my face.
"We have beers. Come and join us."
She had an accent from an Icelandic-type country that made me hate her even more. Her voice sounded alluring and joyfully young. I knew then that I was losing control of the situation, and I never did like to lose. "We just got married. We came here for privacy." Those two were so bubbly that it made me sick all the way inside. They acted as if life had been a breeze so far, and I hated that. No doubt they both had bright futures ahead, lives with no real issues to face. I pictured them both as older women, stuck in the gilded cages of a vast empty home, along with their prescription pills and martinis, while their husbands were off with a younger version of them. A cliche, I know. But those girls were a cliche, too.
"I'm sure we can camp one night. It'll be fun."
I stalked off to the water. I always liked to look at currents running. All that power and force running by energies unknown to me. I felt the same way inside every day. We did camp. I wasn't really given the choice. He set up our tent not far from theirs and ignored my protests. The girls both made a show of dragging over fallen logs to use as seats, and one of them even dug a fire pit, although she giggled the whole time. The three of them talked about his job as a schoolteacher and their future jobs as wives of doctors and lawyers or some such. I wasn't listening. I was sulking.
"Join in. Lighten up."
Indeed. A ball of rage began to grow. It spread its tendrils out from my heart and overtook me. As night began to fall, he lit the fire in the manly way of his. The girls passed around a bottle of whiskey and danced, without any regard for me. the wife who watched gloomily from a distance. He stared at them with the greediest expressions as they flirted. How I hated him in those moments. Imagine his horror and surprise when I shot them both. I'd owned the gun for a while. I brought it all quite legally when I first took ownership of the store, and I knew how to shoot, and how to shoot well. We do indeed live in dangerous times, and I wanted to protect myself, and then later, him too. When he'd suggested hiking, I started to worry about bears, so I brought it along. I didn't want his perfect, beautiful face to be ruined and mauled by a giant furry claw. I enjoyed looking at it far too much. I regarded his face as my face. Mine. From the day I met him, he became everything to me. My reason to live and my anchor to this world. One that had a tight and small chain that I fashioned to be that way. I decided he wasn't allowed to look at anyone other than me in that hungry way of his. You might wonder why I shot the girls, when really, it was his disrespect. But isn't it always the way with women, that we blame the females more than the men? The power and force of those shots almost knocked me off my feet.
What the hell?
He staggered back as if I were the monster and not the girls. His face was patterned with splashes of crimson. Oh, come on. What do you expect? You were practically coming all over them both. How dare you? You belong to me now. We are married. The end of my sentence boomed throughout the forest, a show of my betrayal and fury. My hands shook, and I aimed the gun at him. Dare to run, and I'll shoot you too, I screamed. Tears ran down his face, and his mouth kept bobbing open like a little fish taken straight from the water.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God!
He chanted while spit ran down his face. Get a grip, darling. We sat in absolute silence. I let him wail and cry. I let him shake and sob. All I could hear was the sound of the water and a gentle breeze that swayed the trees. I love you.
Why would you kill them? They did nothing wrong. You have no right.
Yes, I do. I told him because I did. I did have the right. You belong to me. You said you loved me. You made a vow. One of the girls chose that moment to sputter and cough blood high in the air. She gurgled and opened her eyes. Her bewildered, glassy gaze landed on me. Ah, shit.
Listen, put the gun on the ground. I'll go and get help.
No.
Please. I'm asking you as your husband.
No. He had the absurd nerve to raise his arms as if I were the bad guy in the situation and holding him hostage. I stared at him. His face soothed my soul, and his expression made me want to laugh. I'm sorry, I really am. Will you help me? The girl moaned in pain. I ignored her and walked toward him. There's a darkness in me. Help me get rid of it. I love you so much. That's all.
You're asking me to cover up a double murder for you?
Yes.
No.
Then I'll shoot us both.
No, you won't.
I will, actually.
Okay. I'll do it. I'll help you.
The backstabbing piece of shit did help me. He helped me so much he practically did everything. We dug graves for the bodies. By the time we'd finished, the girl had died anyway. I didn't even see it happen, which was a shame. I wanted to look her in the eye and smile. I'd won again, you see. If life was a game, I was in first place, and he was still mine. Him. Just for me. The next 2 days were awkward, and I refused to let him out of my sight as we made our way back out of the park. He did not appreciate this. He wanted privacy to use the toilet, and I wouldn't let him.
Did you enjoy killing them?
No, but they deserved it.
Have you killed before?
Of course not, I lied. I was overcome with emotion, because I love you. He hadn't replied. The nights in our tent were brutal. He turned away from me, and one night all he ever did was cry. I thought then that he was just upset because he loved me so much. Help me. I can make it right. We can put it behind us.
I won't be able to. You're unstable.
If you tell anyone, or leave me, I'll kill you. I said that because it was true, because I was terrified beyond words, and I didn't like the feeling at all. I wasn't bothered about prison or being punished for my crime. I only cared that prison would take me away from him, and I couldn't allow that to happen. I felt the chain on my anchor, our tie that binds, loosen a little, and it scared me. I'll do anything you want. I can change.
Go to sleep.
We got back to our car, the car I bought for him, and we drove home in silence. He refused to speak to me for the entire 100 or so miles. As soon as we got home, he went straight to bed. I went online and ordered a tracking device for his car. I canceled his phone service and set up a brand new one in my name, one I had full access to. I watched him sleep. Well, I watched him pretend to be asleep. I cooked a casserole, his favorite kind, and I took it to our room, into our marital bedroom, and served it on a special tray just for him.
I don't know who you are anymore.
I'm your wife, darling. For better or for worse.
We should get an annulment. A divorce. I mean, it was a mistake. I'm sorry. I won't tell a soul what you did. I promise.
What we did, you mean?
No. You.
No, darling. You. Your DNA will be on those bodies, not mine. You fired the gun. Not me. At least that's what I'll tell anyone who happens to ask. While you were busy digging graves, I emptied your hairbrush of hair. Both girls got a handful, as if there had been a fight. Your mouth guard, that silly plastic contraption you wear, I wiped it all over them. And who'd ever believe that I was a killer?
You're crazy. You're mad.
I'm going to call a friend and say you were acting a little odd for those last few days. I'll say we met two girls and you argued with them. I'm planting seeds, darling. And you and I both know seeds grow. Now, call the police. I dare you.
You're a psycho.
No, I'm your wife. Till death do us part, remember, darling? I suppose you can imagine the next few weeks were tough. I wore my best, most charming mask, and I wore my very best act. He refused to touch me, and it hurt. I worked in the butcher store every day. I smiled and I asked how everyone was. I made an effort in every single thing I did. I made a few comments to people I knew. I said he was acting strange and angry. I said I was concerned about him. I made an effort with him too. A big effort. I cooked, cleaned, washed, and ironed. I played at the perfect housewife every evening. Little by little, he relaxed. At least I thought he had. It's working, I told myself. It's definitely working. I watched his car on my laptop, that little red dot going to and from the school he worked at. I monitored his calls. I watched him, and I waited. Almost every day I expected police to be knocking at the door or tearing it down. Every night I breathed a sigh of relief as he seemed to thaw a little more. One morning, a Tuesday in fact, he told me he was going for drinks with his teacher friends after school. I felt the dagger hanging over my head fall down closer and tilt a little. Of course, I smiled through gritted teeth. Can I come along too?
It's just for teachers. just for faculty and you wouldn't enjoy it.
Thoughts twisted around in my mind all day while different scenarios tumbled over one another. I closed the store early and fled upstairs. I watched the little red dot of his car blip into action. I watched its progress along streets and roads until it stopped in front of a smart row of newly built apartments. The scene of my betrayal. I dressed in black clothing and left, but not before I tucked one of my sharpest knives into the deep pocket of my coat. It was dark by the time I arrived on foot. With each step I took to get there, the rage came back full force and spiraled its way out of control. I plotted, and I fumed. I planned, and I boiled inside. I hadn't known what I expected to find, not really. But I already knew that somehow, the man that had set my world ablaze was betraying me. The pain felt exquisitely sharp and brutal. I was hungry, deep down inside for revenge before I even approached the apartment block. Fate decided my future, or at least made it easier to witness my decline. A single downstairs apartment was lit up, and the blind was only half drawn. I peered inside slowly. My husband, my love, my whole life. He was sitting at a flimsy, cheap kitchen table with a brunette woman. He held his head in his hands, and she stared at him, with her hand placed over her pretty mouth. She reached out and laid a hand on his shoulder. Vomit rose in my throat as I fought the bitterness back down. That was my shoulder. Only I was allowed to touch it. I knew he was telling her my secrets. Our secret. And I know who she was. The pretty girl from the flower store a few doors down from mine. The one he had dated before me. The girl I stole him from. Although he was mine. He was always mine. My hand clasped the hilt of the knife inside of my coat. In a single second, I decided to press the bell and confront them both. But then an idea occurred to me, and instead, I went home. I cried no tears on my solitary journey back. That skill had always been beyond me. Instead, I laughed at my own cunning. When you learn what I did, you might understand why. He came home and my act was already settled back into place. I rubbed his tense shoulders for him as he grimaced, and I ignored the smell of whiskey and lies on his breath.
Why did you do it?
It was a mistake. A glitch. I didn't mean to. I hate myself for it. Thick, deafening silence settled between us, and I leaned forward to smell his lemon and baby powder smell. He smelt a perfume instead. Her perfume, not mine.
This can't go on.
I know. It won't. We were both talking about different things, and I knew it. My perspective was not his anymore. He was a magnet for me, and the polarity had switched. He went to bed and lay down with his back to me like a slab of ice. I watched him all night. I watched the steady rise of his chest, and I listened to the gentle sounds of his snores. My back felt full of daggers and knives. Each one pierced my soul until it bled. Him. He had destroyed us. The next day I sprang into action. I paced and planned. I shook with adrenaline as I dialed the flower store. The one the girl he'd been with worked at. Hi, I said in my most gentle and sweet voice. I believe my husband has been telling you lies and setting me up. Could you please spare 10 minutes to hear my side? He's dangerous, you see. And I can prove it. I really can. I really can prove it.
It wouldn't be appropriate.
Please. And come in the back way of my store, in case he's watching. Please, I beg you, and don't tell anyone. If he finds out... It only took her 15 minutes. 15 minutes for her curiosity to peak to overflowing. Only 900 seconds for her to decide her own fate. I listened for the bell around the back, the bell usually reserved for meat deliveries only. I closed the store briefly with a handwritten back in 10 sign. She stalked in and glanced around in her smart outfit and fancy shoes. I always kept the chopping and cutting areas extremely clean. All the same, she raised a perfect eyebrow in disgust as she sat very elegantly for a trader, politely for a stealer of husbands. I despise her. Her with her pretty face and flowery scent. She stared at me and blinked rapidly. She was a demon to me. A demon in an outfit of skin and nasty clothing. First of all, before I tell you the truth about him, are you sleeping together? Her face reddened at my words, and I knew the truth right then, although she shook her head.
No, I...
But I saw the lust and memories in her eyes. I always know a liar when I see one. For a second, it amazed me how they'd ever have the time to fuck, or how they'd gotten in the mood in the first place after talking about me and what I'd done.
He's going to leave you, you know. Any day now, he'll leave and go to the police. I know what you did, but he...
A burst of adrenaline exploded inside me. My mask slipped and fell off entirely. I felt as if I had just been kicked in the stomach. The blow was so strong that I jolted and staggered back. Then came the rage. The blackness. It flooded my system until I was nothing but a ball of fury. Electricity crackled and popped in my blood as I sprang for her. Her. The enemy. Her eyes widened in panic. She gasped and gurgled when I plunged my best sharp knife straight into her heart. Right in the very same place my own pain lived in and festered. He's mine, I seethed. Mine. The light behind her eyes faded, and she died without any more sounds. Blood poured from her pretty mouth, and I kicked her off my chair. She crashed to the floor on her face. I stomped on her head for good measure. I only felt bad she couldn't feel it. I fetched my biggest chopping knives, the good ones I keep aside for thick meats, and I got to work. I removed the sign from the window and found a queue of two people, regulars, both waiting for me outside. That was a long 10 minutes, one said. I've been waiting for an age. I'm so sorry. I had a migraine. The stress, I think. Oh, dear. Whatever is the matter? My husband. I think he's seeing someone else. In fact, I'm sure he is. I wiped my face with a wet tissue for the illusion of tears. It was a trick I used for years. My two kindly customers crooned and soothed. They both seemed genuinely concerned for me, and I knew they'd go off and spread my troubles all around town. And I was counting on it. Every time the store emptied, I went out to the back to work. An hour or so later, the meat delivery came, and that made my task a lot easier and simpler. By the time he came home, I had supper cooked and new white pillar candles lit at our dining table. I took his jacket and asked him about his day. He shrugged and ignored me. Sit and eat. Let's talk like a normal couple. I made your favorite casserole. He sat in silence and I poured him a double whiskey. He drank it back in one and grimaced, so I poured him another, and then another. Eat, I prompted, and so he did. He looked gaunt in the candlelight, only half the man he used to be. His blue eyes had lost their sparkle, his tiny wrinkles had deepened, his shirt hung loose on his thinning body, and gray hairs poked out from the blonde. I watched him eat a few mouthfuls while several thoughts stampeded for the main position in my mind. I truly thought that we had our whole lives to look forward to together. I guess I also knew that I wasn't the same as other people, and no matter how hard I ever tried, I never would be. So I guess that abyss of difference was almost bound to trip me up at some point. Trip us up. People like me are a fascination for some, They watch psychopaths or killers on the silver screen and they feel troubled or scared, but only for a short time. The evil for them is contained within a giant screen. The depraved, the deranged, and the dangerous exist for entertainment purposes only. Yet for me, it is simply the way I am. Those people go home and climb into their comfortable beds. Maybe they worry about their jobs or their bills, or their children. They don't expect a member of their own society to ever be a threat to them or their families. They don't expect a killer to be running their local butcher store. They don't expect that their wife or husband might well be wearing a real or metaphorical human-shaped mask. For them, there is a grim voyeurism in watching fake blood-curdling screams and of seeing heads in boxes mailed to detectives by someone playing the most ancient and noble game of cat and mouse. People like me, we feel. We do. Pain, revenge, control, and instinct. But for me, I once felt love. The deliriously addictive emotion of love. One thing that can both build or destroy completely. I love you. At least I did.
Huh?
Darling, how could you? Wasn't I the perfect wife? He stared at me in that cold look. I saw hate. Real, genuine despair and hate.
What? You're a murderer, and you've trapped me. You make me sick. You only play at being a perfect wife. None of it's real, is it?
A bubble of anger burned in my chest. How dare he? After all I did for him? A little flutter of butterflies started up in my stomach. I held my laughter inside and reminded myself of control. Is that why you want to leave me for her?
I don't know what you're talking about.
He lied. I know, darling. I know all about it. In fact, she was here earlier. Your girlfriend. The mistress. She was here. His spoon froze on the way to his mouth. He dropped it as if it were red hot and it clattered loudly onto his empty, almost licked clean bowl.
What have you done? Where is she?
Spit flew from his mouth and settled on the table. She's a part of you now. Isn't that what you always wanted? Darling?
You're mad. Where is she? Pass me my phone.
She's in the casserole. You just ate her. You ate her all up. I couldn't help it any longer. I laughed a maniac laugh. I smiled a smile of absolute triumph as I watched his features show a range of expressions that made me quite jealous of their realism. How I wished I could show emotions that way. I tucked them away for future use, certain they might come in handy. I expected him to turn and vomit, or maybe stick fingers down his throat. Instead, he surprised me and made a grab for me. His chair crashed to the floor as he tried to dash around the table. The pills I'd put in his whiskey slowed him down just enough, and he fell to the floor in a tangle. I crouched down low so I could be with him.
What a fool you are. You had it all.
Stop this. Please.
I recognized his expression as fear, and I stroked his hair to soothe him. Even though everything was his fault, I could still play at being kind.
If I can't have you?
I whispered in his ear.
Nobody can.
I slit his throat. It pained me to have to do that. It hurt me to know that he'd given me no choice or any alternative. I held him as he died. I wrapped my arms around him as the spark inside him drained away. It happened quicker than I expected. I dragged his body downstairs and the cleanup took all night. In the morning, I called a friend. One I kept in touch with in case I ever needed her for anything. And I told her that I woke up to find him gone. I said that he'd taken all of our money, all the cash that I'd been saving in the house. I said I was hurt. I said I was in pain, and that it was relentless. That part, at least, was true. Later that day, I held a sale of fresh meat, and I had lots of eager and happy customers. I had a good meat deal, a really good one. And it's only fair to share it after all. You've all been so kind. Customers left with bags full, and everyone was pleased. Scraps went into the furnace, and I watched the fire burn them all. I've always liked fire. It's one of my most favorite things to look at. The next day, people came back wanting more meat. Those sausages were delicious, and that pork went down a treat. Were just a couple of the compliments I received. A day later, I reported my husband as an official missing person. I told an officer that I suspected that he'd been having an affair with someone local, and that they'd taken my money and fled, possibly to Mexico. I received sympathy all around. Rumor had it that a young woman was also missing, a local woman from the flower store. The town put two and two together, until it became a fact that the pair had run away together. That piece of gossip suited me just fine. My business was booming, and it kept me extremely busy. It was in the evenings when I missed him deeply. I told myself that it was better to have loved and lost than never to have loved before. But the pain still settled on my chest like an enormous boulder that I couldn't shift. The color in the world died for me, and life returned to a standard gray. Then, two female bodies were found in the same national park we hiked in for our honeymoon. My friend called to tell me. She whispered to me and asked if it was possible that he might have done something terrible to those girls. Yes, it's very possible that he did just that. I arranged my face into a copied expression of shock and made my way to the police station to report my nagging suspicions. His legacy soon came to be that he was a murderer on the run from the authorities. A double killer, no less. A schoolteacher, a thief, an adulterer. No one suspected me. Not once. I loved him dearly. I did. I kept a few thin slices of him in my own personal freezer. When the pain becomes too much, I make a sandwich. He stays close to me that way. He's always with me. As quickly as the love started up, it stopped. He shattered it. He did. Broken things never quite look the same as they do when they're new. You can always notice the crack, or a chunk missing here or there, if you happen to look hard enough. Others notice too. They sense a chip or fault in something that used to be beautiful. They know if there's a weakness, a soft piece of scarring, or a way in. It was his fault. We made vows that only took him just 8 days to break. Only 8 days. How can I be to blame? I only operate on instinct, after all. There is no desire to cause suffering planted deep within my warped DNA. There is no button to switch, no code to activate the drive of a killer. No bare wiring that sparks together in the wrong places. I was a woman in love. More in love than fairy tales talk of, or myths and legends say. More in love than wandering minstrels sang of long ago. More in love than I could stand. It was him that pulled too hard on our bindings. Him that twisted and warped our sacred bond. My survival instinct drew itself tall and protected me. If I let him walk away, let him leave me behind, all broken with his betrayal, then how would I have lived? Who was I before him, after all? It's my nature, that's all. My instinct to survive. My friends, you know what they say about a woman scorned. After all, I'm just a nice and quiet girl.
I hope you enjoyed Murder Most Horrid, as written by Sarah Jane Huntington and performed by Danielle Hewitt, Jonathan West, and Melissa Medina. This story was brought to us by our friends at Velox Books. Check out more like it by visiting www.veloxbooks.com. You'll be glad that you did. More of Danielle Hewitt's work can be found over at our friends at The Creepy Podcast. Check it out by visiting www.creepypod.com. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. See you next Monday. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.